Every Tuesday, Postcards helps you reach across borders without actually taking a trip. With Postcards, the world becomes smaller and more connected. Postcards.
Hello and welcome to Postcards, a show which takes you across borders without actually leaving home. I'm Wen Jie. Rock climbers are giving Jordan's iconic archaeological site of Petra a makeover. Using drills and hammers, the climbers have teamed up with archaeologists in the hope of preventing further rock slides at the world-famous sandstone attraction, which is prone to earthquakes and flash floods. Here's Nick Lanigan with this postcard from Jordan.
The road into Jordan's world-famous archaeological site of Petra is a winding 1.2-kilometer-long canyon called the Sikh. On foot or by horse carriage and donkey, thousands of tourists visit the UNESCO World Heritage Site every year. But today, the road is blocked. Eyes squint upwards at two men dangling from the sandstone walls, around 100 meters above the ground. One rock climber swings a hammer and cracks rock from the cliff wall as it crashes to the canyon below. The ground is soon covered with pieces of pink, brown, and grey sandstone shards, which Jordanian authorities and UNESCO say were previously at risk of falling. Their collaborative Sikh Canyon Stability Project aims to knock down these rocks before heavy rain or earthquakes trigger a dangerous fall. The removal is part of a risk management project funded by the Italian Development Corporation to track flash floods. Georgia Cesaro is the Sikh Stabilization Project Officer.
The natural beauty of the Sikh is in fact also its fragility, because this is a natural monument carved on sandstone, which is a very fragile kind of rock. Many people might not understand that, therefore might not be able to know how to better protect the site.
The site's beauty is a combination of nature and civilization, where the prehistoric Nabataeans once carved buildings into the soft pink sandstone, giving Petra its name, the Rose City. The Nabataeans lived around 2,000 years ago and were ancient Arab nomads who used the spectacular canyon and empty valley as a road to their capital, Petra. From this fortified base between the trade routes of the Indian Ocean, the Mediterranean and the Red Sea, the Nabataean civilization boomed. Along the canyon they carved gods, camels, and sophisticated water catchment systems. Still standing inside Petra are the colossal columns, gigantic temples, a marriage enclosure, and an amphitheatre, which today draws around 500,000 tourists every year. But the arid land along the Dead Sea has suffered repeated flash floods and earthquakes. One such earthquake in 393 AD leveled much of ancient Petra. The stabilization team is a mix of climbing professionals from the Amman-based adventure tourism company Tropical Desert Trips and local workers from Petra's largest village, Wadi Musa. On top of the Sikh, marbled sandstone stretches to the horizon and tourists appear like small specks below. The first task at this height is to secure the lead rope from which the debris removers hang throughout the day. Hakim Tamimi, the day's team leader from Tropical Desert Tours, and Atef Al-Fagir, a local climber, both work to secure the rope.
We are training how to climb, because after the end of this project, we will then be able to descend, remove rocks and do everything. We will make the Sikh safe.
Tamimi drops a few meters down to another ledge to remove some debris with the rest of the team. The team then starts pummeling rock targets and throwing down loose rocks. The rocks roll down the cliffs and land on the tarpaulin, which has been spread on the ground. Sufyan Al-Said is a rock climber in the project.
It's sandstone, it's all layers, and there's a lot of loose rocks and basically just standing there that might fall if any rain happened or any water or some rocks. It's really unstable. If there is a bird that's standing in that rock, might fall.
In 2013, Al-Sayed and other climbers installed wireless and prism monitoring devices throughout the SEEK. These devices were used in combination with satellite topography by the Jordanian authorities and UNESCO to gather data on small rock movements. Over 2 years, they identified risk-prone areas in the heavily trafficked canyon.
We worked there for like almost a month. Every single day we were climbing and installing equipment in the cracks and in the loose rocks. And all the data we collected over the 2 years, we're starting now like removing the blocks that might cause a hazard in the people inside the sea.
Giuseppe Del Monaco, a geological consultant for UNESCO who's worked in Petra since 2009, says the ongoing environmental hazards there mean work must continue in order to keep the tourist sites safe.
The use of simple techniques has permitted to reduce greatly the risk of debris and small rockfall during heavy rainfall. And this is one of the most important purposes of the project, is to transfer simple knowledge, but effectual knowledge, to local system in order to let them capable to do this as a long-term maintenance of the SEEK.
Work pauses while carriages and tourists continue the walk down the SEEK. The work these climbers and archaeologists are doing may ensure visitors can continue to enjoy this site for decades to come.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn. Young men and women living with HIV in Uganda have taken to the catwalk to raise awareness about the stigma and discrimination that surrounds people carrying the virus. But the Young Positive pageant isn't just about physical beauty. It also tests contestants on their general knowledge of HIV. Here's Ryan Price with this postcard from Uganda.
A Ugandan beauty queen turns heads in a dress made out of recyclable materials. And a young man wears clothing traditionally worn by the Karamojong, a tribe known for their fierce warriors that shun Western-style clothes in northern Uganda. They've traveled to the Ugandan capital, Kampala, from across the country to take part in the Young Positive Beauty Pageant, a competition for young people living with HIV. By the end of the evening, one girl will be crowned Miss Young Positive in the annual competition organized to enlighten people about the dangers of discriminating against those with the virus. A similar title for young men is also being contested. Instead of physical beauty, contestants are specifically judged on their general knowledge of HIV matters, rather than their performances as fashion models or dancers. Organizers of the HIV-themed pageant, which launched in 2014, say the competition was designed to engage young people in the HIV conversation. Fiona Kitui is a communications officer at the Uganda Network of Young People Living with HIV and AIDS. She says one way of curbing AIDS discrimination is for more people living with HIV to open up about their status rather than conceal it.
With all the contestants that have been coming and all that, I think it has helped them help others to disclose, help others to be able to accept themselves the way they are and believe that they are worth something in life. Because many young people out there believe they cannot do anything in life. They believe, they've been told so many negative stories. And we are thinking having these ambassadors in communities has been able to help them.
About 1.5 million people in Uganda live with HIV, according to the Joint United Nations Program on HIV/AIDS, or UNAIDS. According to UNYPA, 430,000 young people between the ages of 15 and 23 get infected every year. Stella Kintusi is the executive director of NAFO FANU, or the National Forum of People Living with HIV/AIDS Network in Uganda. She says only half of those infected have access to medical treatment vital for their well-being.
So the current HIV situation in Uganda, we stand at 7.3% prevalence rate, with about 1.5 million Ugandans living with HIV. Approximately half of them accessing antiretroviral therapy, and about 43% of those on treatment actually accessing viral load services.
Uganda's AIDS rates fell sharply in the 1990s after an aggressive public awareness campaign promoting monogamous sexual relationships and urging medical treatment. But NAFO FANU says in recent years there has been a disappointing reversal, with the rate of infection among young people rising in both urban and rural areas. 21-year-old Priscilla Asimwe takes to the runway in a dress traditionally worn by women of the Banganda, the largest tribe in the country. Competing in this year's pageant was a big decision for her, as many of her friends didn't know that she and her family were living with HIV. Representing the central region, Asimwe came to the capital from her parents' village in the west of Uganda to go to university. She shares a small one-bedroom house with her three sisters, her brother-in-law, her brother, and three nieces and nephews. Asimwe says the Young Positive pageant has changed her life.
I said personally it has changed because now I can stand in public and speak. I'm not worried anymore of my status because it's like that congregation helped me disclose it more to those who didn't know. Yeah, and now I believe in myself.
Asimwe struggled when she found out she had HIV at the age of 16. She'd been taking medication for the condition since she was born.
At first, I had the self-stigma in me, so I couldn't do anything, fetching water, no. My wife was just, I was in self-denial. I was like, no, I have no hope. But then, after finding out that even my sisters are the same and they are even older than me, so I'm like, okay, I will also reach their age. So I started gaining courage. But all that was through counseling. The counselors at the centers, they give you some counseling. Then even my sisters, I said, no, you can make it. We are all alive. My mom says, you see, I gave birth to you.
She says her three sisters, who are also HIV positive, have given her hope for the future. The four women have to take their medication daily, once in the morning and once in the evening. It can sometimes prove a challenge because they can only take the drugs on a full stomach, and often there is no money to buy food. Asimwe's eldest sister, Stella Kayima, hopes that the beauty pageant will change the family's fortunes.
I think it's an opportunity, because what I know, when someone comes out and speaks about himself, many different people told. Due to different attitudes, you find that you can get some people who can help you out with your life according to the life experience you've tried to share with them. Yeah, so I see this like as an opportunity to our family.
While Asimwe didn't win the competition, she says the experience has helped her greatly. 18-year-old Tryphena Nakunda was crowned Miss Young Positive 2016.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn.
New technology is being developed to preserve and conserve the Sydney Opera House. Until now, engineers have had limited understanding of the structure of the famous landmark. But a high-tech hammer and eventually robots could help preserve it for future generations. Here's Zhao Jianfu with this postcard from Australia.
Robots could soon be checking the sails of the Sydney Opera House for signs of wear and tear. It's one concept that's emerged from a major conservation project. The aim is to keep the famous building in the best condition possible for the next 200 years. Keeping the tiles and concrete sails in great shape is a big responsibility for maintenance workers, and at 67 meters high, the graceful curves can be dangerous too. Greg McTaggart is the director of building.
Our way of doing the inspections now is putting up many abseilers to crawl all over the building. So, you know, with that sort of work comes inherent risks. And even though we have all the risk assessments and the safety equipment, it'd be better if we didn't have to do that. So, if we can find a way, with electronic testing on board a robot of some sort, it would certainly be much cheaper and much easier and safer.
Scientists from the University of Sydney have created a high-tech hammer to test the quality of the tiles without damaging them. The plan is to build robots to do the job on this World Heritage-listed site. Louise Herron is the CEO of the Sydney Opera House.
And our past includes this brilliant work, the finest work of 20th century architecture, and the foremost use of concrete in the world. We need to ensure that we do everything we can to conserve it without ruining it in any way.
The Opera House was completed in 1973. The original construction process was largely experimental. Even the concrete sails were cast on site, and it's not clear how. As part of the project, some of the original builders were interviewed, and engineers are using that information to plan for the future when major renovations might be needed. Modern technology, including ultrasound, is being used to assess the health of the concrete and determine what lies beneath.
Those sorts of new technologies are really important to us. So, for example, the beautiful concrete we can see where we're sitting now, we don't want to mark the surface of that by doing traditional ways of investigation like drilling holes or taking core samples. So if we can find a non-invasive way of testing like X-ray or ultrasonics to determine what's going on with the concrete, it fits in much better with the heritage.
The Getty Foundation provided $200,000, and this was matched by the Opera House. Its aim is to protect some of the best examples of modern architecture around the world and has given existing conservation work a big boost. Lasers have been beamed all over the Opera House to create a 3D fly-through and a central database containing everything that's known about the site.
For a building like this, it's really important that we set the groundwork now for future generations of asset managers and custodians of the building so they don't have to go trawling through people's garages to find information. So if we can have that all contained within the 3D computer environment, that'll be fantastic.
Robots could be on board within 3 to 5 years, giving John Arten's masterpiece a thoroughly modern makeover.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn.
Once, the stars of video gaming were Mario, Sonic, and Lara Croft. But now, thanks to online video services like YouTube and Twitch, ordinary gamers are finding fame online. UK-based The Yawks Cast is a collective of gaming fans which broadcasts to audiences the size of which television programs would be proud. Before we come to the end of today's show, I would like to share with you an extra postcard from the UK. Meet The Yawks Cast, a group of passionate gaming fans who together boast an audience of more than 20 million YouTube subscribers. The group, with more than 20 different YouTube channels, features mainly gaming content and videos related to playing games with friends. Together, they became the first UK-based YouTube channel to hit 1 billion views. They're meeting fans at an EGX video games event in Birmingham. Mark Terps Turpin boasts more than 300,000 subscribers to his personal YouTube channel and more than 26 million views. He says advances in technology have allowed gaming fans like himself to find a receptive audience online.
But it's become easier and easier for people to create content. Previously, you needed a very expensive camera, a production studio. You'd need access to a distribution facility. But now with broadband speeds getting so fast, computers getting so quick, smartphones getting smarter, you can create a YouTube channel with just a basic smartphone that will upload straight through an app to an audience then. That if you are compelling and you have something to say that resonates with other people, then you can find an audience and create a business. Through creating that sort of content.
And there's certainly an audience for the taking. YouTube says it has more than 1 billion users, almost a third of all people who use the internet. Amazon-owned Twitch, a video and community platform for gamers, boasts around 9.7 million daily active users. Turpin says channels like the Yogscast can reach audiences in a way traditional media can't.
We create humorous content. It's entertainment driven. It's narrative based creations in games, in sandbox environments. We tell our own stories and have fun, just friends. It's something that TV can't do. It's too slow. There's approval processes. There's schedules. There's time that we don't have to contend with. We can be very immediate. We can create timely, fun content that is exactly what these hungry millennials want.
But why do young millennials watch it? Why not play the computer games themselves? Turpin says it's bonding over entertaining games which viewers love, or perhaps a way to sample titles which some gamers can't afford.
It's a very fun thing to do to watch someone play a game. It can be infuriating if they're bad and you're thinking, oh, come on, but it's exciting nonetheless. You want to get involved. It's enjoyable. For some younger kids out there, they can't afford to play all of the games out there. For others, we do stuff that requires more technical knowledge in terms of how you set it up, and we just give a window for people to easily enjoy content that they want to.
It's further proof of the popularity of gaming worldwide. According to market analysis published by NewZoo, the global audience for online gaming content is expected to grow past 500 million this year.
Gaming is one of the most popular forms of entertainment. In terms of revenue, it eclipses movies, films, music. It is the biggest thing out there. It's billions and billions of dollars spent in entertainment, and it's such good value to a consumer. You get hours and hours and hours and hours of content and entertainment out of your spend versus like a movie or something like that. That's a very passive, linear sort of hour and a half, and that's all you've got. So more and more people search games as their chosen medium of entertainment, and that's allowed people like ourselves to kind of help encourage and, you know, grow that enjoyment further.
Manchester-based college student Kayla Bloomfield is a big fan of the Yogscast. The 19-year-old says she feels she can relate to the online gaming content creators like Terps, more so than on traditional media.
I don't feel like I can relate to a lot of the people that I see on TV, because not many of them are like gamers who are interested in all like the stuff that they did, and it's not really, they don't really make shows based around gaming for the stuff for the nerds.
With that, we wrap up today's postcards. For program producer Zhao Jianfu, I'm Wen Jie. See you next week.